The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Thank you all for joining us on not only a Tuesday, but a Hot Take Tuesday. Joining me tonight on the podcast, we have Charlie Smith out of Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island, and Terry from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Charlie, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing superb, good sir. How are you?
Doing very well. These are always the fun episodes, right? We get to interact with some of the followers on the account get to, see what their opinions are all about. Terry, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing splendid. Just ready to get into some hot takes from our followers on Twitter, as I will always call it. And,
No better time than the present. Charlie, what do you have for your hot take of the night?
Well, my hot take is going to come courtesy of Da Bowman Society, Owen, Da Bowman Society on Twitter/X. Thank you so much. Tyler O'Neill hits 30 homers and 90 RBIs. So I like this for a couple reasons. One, I am the only guy on the planet, apparently, that as far as the Bastards are concerned and our fans are concerned, that really thinks outside of you, good sir, or man, I'm not sure, that thinks that Tyler O'Neill is actually going to turn himself into a major league ball player this year. So Tyler O'Neill, expectations were really, really low. After 2021, he had a 34 home run season, had 80 RBIs, hit 286, has really fallen from grace, has only had 24 home runs since then, has had a total of 80 RBIs in the last 2 years and this one so far. I think this is a prime candidate where a change of scenery and everything is kind of going in the opposite direction for you. You've already had two home runs. You've walked three times. You're getting on base. You're setting the table for your team. You're hitting 400. I think this is just the guy that is prime time for that. I love the take. I hope he can hit 30. My personal hope is that he hits 25 to 27 home runs, 80 RBIs, and hits somewhere between 270 and 275. So if he ends up doing that, more power to you. I love the take, and I hope he does fantastic wonders for us. I see him as the upgraded non-drama version of Hunter Renfrow.
Non-drama version would be very interesting. Terry, what are your thoughts?
He wasn't that dramatic. I mean, I'm talking about Renfrow, but anyway, Renfrow never gets hurt, by the way. You know, he hurts people's feelings, apparently, according to Charlie, but he doesn't get hurt in physically, you know? And, like I said on the previous show, it's going to take me a while to buy into Tyler O'Neill. He seems to be blending in just fine with the clubhouse. He's holding his own at a minimum defensively and shown some power. Is he like going off like Adam Duvall did last year for that week where he had the greatest week in MLB history, according to some Red Sox fans on Twitter? I don't know, but we'll see. Go ahead, Charlie. Charlie's on mute. Charlie's.
Hey, better me be on mute than not on mute saying what I'm about, what I was saying 2 seconds ago. But here's the thing. Here are the facts. Yeah. Hurting feelings does matter. It is 2024, Terry. You should know this. 2019, he was a Padre. 2020 was a Tampa Bay Ray. 21, a member of the Red Sox. We're thankful he did probably his best work in Boston. 22, Milwaukee. 23, LA, Cincinnati. 24, Kansas City. He's 0-for-7 with 4 strikeouts before today's action. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in 6 years. I don't think that's just because of, you know, being a good hitter. I think there's definitely something behind the scenes going on, too. I'll leave it there.
5 years from now, he's going to be a great guy to plug in on Immaculate Grid. So there's that.
That is true.
Yeah, him and Octavio Dotel are locks for everything.
Bringing it back to Tyler O'Neill, the opportunities are going to be there, absolutely, right? You are one of the protection guys in this lineup. You know, they're going to be trying to avoid Devers, obviously. If Casas gets going, they're going to try to avoid him as well. And as a right-handed bat, you're going to be slotted somewhere in and around those dudes in the lineup. Or you're going to be the one kind of bringing up the bottom half of the lineup and, you know, trying to turn it over to get back to the top of the order. So 30, 90 sounds great. I would love it. It is, you know, a pretty warm take, right? He's done it once, you know, hasn't really stayed on the field long enough to have the opportunities to do it again. But yeah, I think all of us would be thrilled if he had numbers that were anywhere close to that realm. You know, I think Charlie kind of nailed it right on the head. A 25-80 season, I think we would all be over the moon about. And, you know, anything beyond that is just gravy, in my opinion. But for us, it's just going to be, you know, does he have enough at-bats to where he can have the opportunity to reach those levels, right? Because when he hits the ball, it goes a mile. There's no cheap home runs for that guy. Terry, what do you have for your hot take of the evening?
So the one thing that's been driving me nuts on Twitter is you had large scale pessimism and now you've got some fans coming around. They've seen all these guys pitch one game and they're like, oh, my God, these guys are going to be studs all year long. And as I said previously, they were impressive in Seattle. I can't deny that. Only one walk from starting pitching that whole series. It's phenomenal, but whether they can, from a performance standpoint, sustain it all year, that's one thing. Whether they can physically sustain it in terms of health, that's a whole different thing. I mean, Whitlock and Houck have never pitched more than 120 innings. So you're asking a lot for them to go suddenly 150, 160, maybe 170, like, you know, some of the top pitchers in this league will do. Cutter Crawford, another guy, he pitched 129 and one-third innings, and he was completely blown out by about 110 or 115, and they trotted him out there anyway. The dude was just completely gassed. So I don't think this rotation is back. So the hot take, which I probably should have got to a lot quicker, comes from Fenway Cheap Seats on Twitter. And he's very interactive with us. So if you're listening, I'm not trying to bash you here. But, you know, when you say the Red Sox didn't sign Monty because they knew what they had was better, you know, when that's your take, I mean, there's just so many unknowns with the guys that you do have. And Montgomery, well, he's going to miss a few weeks here because he only recently signed, but he's going to pitch a minimum of 160. Probably would have pitched 180 or 90 with the Diamondbacks. And I mean, if you plug him into your 2 or 3 slot, man, you're looking a lot better because you know Pivetta's going to pitch, you know, 160 to 180. What did Bayo do last year? I think he missed a month, didn't he? I'm just trying to get his, let's see.
I think he was around 120 to 140.
He pitched 157 innings. So if, you know, so I would say, I mean, if he matches that, great. You know, I don't see why he won't add another 12 to 14 to it, but you know, you add Montgomery in with Bayo, Pivetta, and suddenly you got three horses in there. And you've got plenty of guys to figure out those other two spots. Like, you don't even need Houck and Whitlock to even exceed 120 because, you know, you can plug an extra guy in there for them at some point in the season. But I think there'll be a lot of regret, you know, come summertime, by not, you know, getting a horse into that rotation. Giolito should have been that guy. We expected him to be that guy. at least in terms of innings pitched, whether or not, I mean, he could have easily dropped a dud out there based on how he pitched all of last year. So there was a lot of risk with Giolito from the performance side of it, not so much from the, the durability side, but I'm not taking anything for granted. I don't think we're back. We're just taking it series by series here. And, you know, if you get tons of innings out of these guys, then we'll talk about it, you know, in August.
Charlie?
Yeah, you know, to echo Terry's point, because you brought up a lot of great points, we've played four games. There's 162 games in the season. If we're 4-0, we're thinking a certain way. We're 0-4, we're thinking a different way. We're 2-2 right now. And we saw something happen that I think blew all of our expectations out of the water. We thought that the starting pitching was not going to do what they did as far as pitchers are concerned. They went lights out for four games against a formidable foe. You're facing really quality starting pitchers and you didn't do well hitting. Okay. You're facing some really, some decently good hitters and an all-star caliber player there. And you went lights out. You know, to Terry's point on one of our prior shows, how many walks did our starters have? One. That's it. I don't remember the last series that we had three or four games that our entire starters allowed one walk or less. I'd have to look back at it, and I don't think we'd find one at all last year. You know, that's just the way that we went.
If you wanted to frame this take in a sense of, you know, they didn't pursue Montgomery because they felt like the arms that they had in-house had a higher upside, I think maybe we could get behind that or get on board with that take. But, you know, Terry mentioned it very well, right? None of these guys, Sands, Pivetta, have really gone deep into a season as a starting pitcher, right? You know, Houck and Whitlock have had their bouts with injury, have been, you know, bullpen to rotation. Crawford is just getting his sea legs underneath him, and same for Bayo, right? Montgomery would have at least taken the ball every fifth day and been out there and been, you know, an innings eater, much like we were expecting Giolito to be. You know, it's a really unfortunate what happened to Giolito, something that he hadn't really experienced in his career to this point. And he was, you know, kind of looking forward to the opportunity to rebuild himself, eat those innings, and be out there and be reliable. So, you know, it's a tough argument to make to say that what Montgomery would have brought to the table is something that we currently have in house, right? You know, the classic, can I get McDonald's? We have McDonald's at home kind of situation, right? And the McDonald's at home is looking good, but again, it is only four games. And, you know, to have a player like Montgomery who's done it year over year, four different organizations in different spots in the spotlight, sure does look a lot nicer. A known commodity is never a bad thing, you know, especially when it's pretty reliable. Anything else you gentlemen would like to add, Charlie?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember which episode it was, Terry, that you mentioned that you thought that 4 years and $80 million was a legitimate number, because I didn't think he was going to get 4 years. I didn't think he was going to get $20 million. I thought he was going to get over 20, because we talked about this World Series winning premium that some teams end up paying, and that was, again, one of the guys. I thought that 3 years, 75 would have been the max that a team would have done. And honestly, I thought a team was going to overpay and do something like 2 for $56 million or 2 for $54 million with like an opt out or something like that. I didn't see him getting a crazy big contract, because he's not that kind of pitcher. Like, ultimately, he didn't want to come to Boston, and I don't blame him, because it didn't look that good. And I don't think it had anything to do with, oh yeah, the Red Sox knew what they had and they didn't want to, you know, add an extra pitcher. Because do you think during the course of the season we won't have a starting pitcher go down? Like, really? That's your mindset? There's some teams that retooled and they got six or seven starters ready with two in the chamber, like ready. Okay, one goes down. Okay, first one off the bench, we're still good. You can never have enough pitching. That's the one position in baseball. You can never have enough of it, period. So, I mean, it is what it is. He'll be, you know, free agent again after a year, but I mean, I don't expect him to do crazy, crazy well in you know, his current team. And I don't think, you know, he's going to see a $150 million contract next year. Yeah, Cody.
I want to say, like, one of the more comfortable times I ever had going into a postseason was, I believe, in 2013 when we had a six-man starting rotation and Jake Peavy was that sixth person, right? Like, to know, like, okay, these games are going to get shorter, or shorter in the sense that, you know, you pull your starter a little bit earlier, but we got that extra guy. You need to go 2 days in a row on short rest or whatever. You have, you know, a six-sided die that you can roll out there. And to your point, right, you can never have enough depth in the pitching rotation, right? Defense wins championships. That's the defense here. And so, you know, in my opinion, obviously Montgomery would have been a great guy to have, but to greener pastures.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. But here's the thing. This guy's been around since 2017. It took him pitching for the Texas Rangers in the second half of the year to get to 10 wins. The guy had never won 10 games in a season. He's won 38 games in 8 years of pitching, or 7 years of pitching. 38 games? That's it? Dude, some guys do that in 2 years. You did that in seven. And I get it, injuries are a part of the game, but you can't fault the Red Sox for not getting them. You can't fault Jordan Montgomery for not coming here. And ultimately, it's because the dollar amount that he wants is not even close to what the dollar amount that the Red Sox were willing to go to get him. So at the end of the day, it wasn't a perfect marriage.
It'll be real interesting to see what happens to him after this season.
100%. I agree. Yeah. I agree. I think it's going to be a rough year for him.
Terry, anything you want to add?
Not really. I was looking at where the Giants finished the last few years in terms of pitching versus, you know, the rest of the league. They were second in 2021. That was their 107 win season. Two of the guys in their rotation, Logan Webb, Kevin Gausman, who the latter of which went on to get a pretty big contract with Toronto. So two guys, you know, two aces in that rotation, basically. Webb was pretty young at the time. He did get decent results out of DeSclafani. And Alex Wood actually had a 3.83 ERA that year. We were just talking about him on the series preview show. But, you know, and then 2022, they were 13th in MLB. So not super great, you know, serviceable. 11th in 2023. So, you know, he's gotten decent results out of them, but he's had proven guys in his rotations each year, and we don't really have that yet. Not one single guy is super proven, you know, and even Pivetta, we're still waiting for him to do it for a full year. So that's why, you know, I want to pump the brakes here in terms of what's realistic after one series.
It's totally fair. And, you know, I think all of us should temper our expectations, right? Whether it be high or whether it be low, it is just one series. And that kind of leads us into the next hot take that we're going to look at. This comes in from Johnny Fontaine at Johnny Fontaine 1. Thank you for chiming in. This particular individual believes that Cassis, Duran, and Abreu are busts. This one kind of struck a little bit of a nerve with me, just because I'm not really sure how they got to this final, I guess, endpoint, for lack of better terms, right? Because, you know, we haven't really seen enough of Abreu to determine if he's good or not. So if you're using the opening series of a season to determine if the guy's a bust, you watched four games. If you want to say that, you know, Cassis and Duran just don't have it, they've been up and they've been down, you know, based off of last season and the season prior, then why is Abreu in this sentence, right? You know, I'm not really sure what is the qualification for entry, right? You know, must pitch a minimum innings to qualify for records or for, you know, award standings or for whatever matter. I personally, you know, the jury's still out on Abreu, obviously. You know, we haven't seen him play very much, but I think Cassis and Duran are bona fide major league players. You know, they've taken their lumps at the major league level. They've, you know, found whatever that water level point is. They've steadied their footing, and they produced and carried our teams at times last season when other members weren't, right? You know, I think each individual had stints from which they were the MVP of the team for at least a month long. You know, it could be a flash in the pan. Sure, you know, these guys might not be your bona fide all-stars or your franchise cornerstone pieces, but a bust is a pretty damning label. And I think to throw it around on a player that has played under 50 games is hasty. And then to put it on Cassis and Duran, who have both had pretty high-end level success, or sorry, pretty high-end success at the major league level, is also a little quick for my liking, but maybe I'm just the eternal optimist. What are your guys' thoughts?
Real quick, all you have is four games and everyone's kind of disappointed in the hitting altogether. You face the Mariners. We got absolutely owned in hitting. We were relevant specifically because of our starting pitching. Willy Abreu last year in 28 games actually hit over .310. He hit .316, had two homers and 14 RBIs, literally averaged an RBI every two games. I don't know how you call someone a bust because of that. He's played in, so far, two games prior to tonight's action. That's it. Casas struggled the first year, didn't even play a full season. Everybody knew it was going to take some time. 2023 was kind of crazy, where a couple of people thought maybe it's time to send it back down. Thankfully, he ended up turning all of us into believers. I think Jason was the person that mentioned that, and I was with him, where, you know what, I was wrong. Casas ended up having a spectacular season after that Chicago Cubs series, where he had a home run in three straight games, including a pinch hit home run in a game that he didn't even start. Very slow out of the gate, 1-for-15 right now. Jaron Duran also really proved himself in 100 games last year. The guy was absolutely electric, was stealing a game, was stealing a bag once every couple of games, had a batting average almost at .300, at one point was hitting over .300, has done fine. So literally, I think this is, you're just calling it a bust after four games, because if you're really going to look at it for 2023, was Casas a bust? No. Was Abreu a bust? No. Was Jaron Duran a bust? No. So this was just, to me, I don't agree with it. And I think this is more based off of four games of this year than all of last year and everything they've done in the past. That's just me. T?
Well, you know, I'm going to disagree with a lot of it. Tristan Casas, I would sign to an 8 to 10 year deal tomorrow, pre-arb. I wouldn't feel bad about it at all. I think he's going to be, I nearly picked him on the season prediction show to be my MVP for the year. I just didn't have faith that the Red Sox would be competitive. You know, I think you have to be on somewhat of a competitive team unless you're completely off the charts. Obviously, Ohtani could win it while he was with the Angels, but I think Casas, I'm confident he's going to be in the top 10 this year in the MVP voting. As far as Jaron Duran, I mean, I think you have to err on the side that he is a bona fide Major League Baseball player at this point. I mean, last year, decent sample size, 332 at-bats, hit at a .295 clip, .346 on base. Not a ton of home runs, but the dude cranked out 34 doubles, 24 stolen bases. You know, and some of those doubles would have been singles, you know, based on a normal player's running ability and sprint speed, but he legged them out to 34. Dude just really impacts a game. Now, he did only go 2-for-16 in the opening series, had four strikeouts. I'd love to see those numbers come down a bit. That's, I think, my biggest knock on him, is he is a bit prone to the strikeout, but drew a couple walks. He didn't have terrible at-bats. I didn't hate anything I saw out of him other than that goofy, you know, base running thing that kind of screwed Casas there in that at-bat. I didn't like to see that, but I think Duran is essentially a bona fide major leaguer. And then you get to Abreu. I don't have a verdict yet on him, but he was very good. Hit like .318 last season with a .370 something on base, small sample size. He did have a dud of a series in Oakland, offensively and defensively. He had a 3 strikeout game. Which one was that? That was on Saturday. And then he had a Bill Buckner moment in the outfield. Ball went through his legs. Advanced the base runners to second and third. They would have been at first and second. Didn't like to see that. And then he got picked off on the bases, which ended the inning. You know, he was in scoring position at the time. Didn't like to see that. But I don't know, and I about Abreu, and the sad thing is he might not get a chance, because when Rob Refsnyder comes back, guess what? Who's the odd man out? Unless Rafaela goes on a terrible strikeout streak here, I think Abreu is the odd man out. And I think even if Rafaela is bad, I think he's going to have a bit of a leash there. So, you know, they're going to want the righty bat of Refsnyder back. And when Vaughn Grissom comes back, that kind of complicates things a little bit. So we'll see, but I'm not willing to call any one of those three guys a bust at this time. And I'll confidently say two of them unequivocally are not busts.
I mean, two of them are guys that, you know, we talked about in the offseason as people that you wanted to extend, potentially build a franchise around, try to lock up at you know, a low price. Terry, you mentioned offering Casas an 8 or 10 year deal. But, you know, that is the nature of the game, right? Is to be reactionary, to see a guy to, you know, hate the performance, hate the feel, and you know, speak out. And, you know, we thank them for their interaction. Were there any other?
Yeah, real quick. Who are you going to replace Tristan Casas with? You want Bobby Dalbec? You want Bobby Dalbec at first base? I mean, what are we talking about? Even Duran, I mean, I guess you could, you know, make a case for him to be the odd man out if you hate him that much. Once Grissom comes back, I mean, you could have, you know, you got O'Neill and Rafaela in your outfield. So
there's not a single player on the Red Sox that can do what Jaron Duran
exactly
does.
Exactly. Why wouldn't you want him in there? You know, if not in the leadoff spot, somewhere in the 8 or 9 spot, you know what I mean? That's nuts.
He hit a single up the middle this weekend, and I like reactionary expected him to be on second base just because he did that so many times last year. It was just like your regular line drive up the middle. They were slow to get to the ball, and he's like, boom, he's on second. And it's crazy that he's reframed the way that we view those kind of hits just by doing it so frequently last year.
And real quick, so do you know where Johnny Fontaine comes from, that name? It's a movie character
name. I'm
blanking
at the moment, yeah. Is it from it's not Goodfellas, is it?
Close, The Godfather.
Oh, it's Godfather.
Godfather.
Yeah. I'm fairly confident. And but he has James Gandolfini in his avatar pic, so clearly an Italian guy, and he interacts with us a lot. So Johnny, keep doing it, bash us all you want.
Appreciate
we're,
it. Yeah. That's
we're here for
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
definitely,
it's all part of the discussion. Right?
We disagreed with the take, but it's all good.
Were there any other hot takes that you guys wanted to break down on the pod?
Alex Cora will be fired before the All-Star break, according to Pompey Cano on Twitter. And he could be. And do you think Alex Cora is going to be mad? I mean, he's still getting his money for the year, which is $8 million, by the way.
He wins one way or the other.
Yeah. He's coming out of this good. And I mean, would it be easier to fire him then or let him get into the playoffs and then fire him? You know, I don't think it's not a hot take as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think Alex Cora is worried about his future one bit.
I mean, that was the frame of reference I was going into it as well. Right. You know, in terms of hot takes, I don't think it's a very hot one. I think it's very plausible that he could be out of here before the All-Star break, especially, you know, if he continues to, we'll say, overmanage games. But to reference what you said, Charlie, it's a win-win for the guy either way, right? You know, he's getting paid regardless. And, you know, either the team's doing well enough to where, you know, he can get traded or he can, you know, get out of there, or, you know, the team's doing poorly and then it's not his problem anymore. So, you know, the guy sitting in a pretty primo position.
Mike McCarthy says Cora's poor management was the difference between a split and a series win. We agree with that. We covered that in the final segment of our Monday episode, so go check that out. Will Succeed also echoes a similar hot take earlier on The team's pitching has only pitched against the Mariners. The real test will be against the Orioles. Couldn't agree more. That is the next tough team on the schedule. And then I guess the final one we can get into here, Caleb Hassan on Twitter says, Seydon Rafaela will win Rookie of the Year. Liked what I saw this series. He did. Nobody had more than four hits, but he was one of them. Yoshida hit four. O'Neill hit four. So I don't love the strikeouts. He did strike out. Let's see. He only played in three of the games, struck out five times in 12 at bats. So when you're pushing 50% there, that's Bobby Dalbec territory. So he has to rein that in. No walks were drawn. So he's got to smooth that out, kind of, you know, iron it a little. And but I don't hate what I see. And he did make a highlight reel defensive play on Saturday. So there's a lot of ways he can help us, but still, he's still developing, I guess, is what I'm saying. And we're hoping potentially he could develop, into a Rookie of the Year candidate. Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to be Rookie of the Year candidate, it's just not going to happen in 2024. It's two words, Jackson and Holiday. And those are the only two words you need to know. This guy's 20 years old. I know why he got brought back down to AAA. And it sucks. It's a crappy reason, but it's a business, and that's what's going to happen. Jackson Holiday is going to run train over everybody else in 2024 once he's up in the bigs. He's just so talented. The guy is ready already. I'm done with the waiting game. So maybe for 2025, if he doesn't end up, having his plate appearance number met, it's possible. But it's just, Jackson Holiday is just incredible, incredible talent. So that's going to be the reason why he doesn't get it this year.
I didn't realize. I knew Matt Holiday had some kids, somewhere, but I didn't realize that this was his son until recently. So, and Matt Holiday was a good, I don't know if he was a perennial all-star, but, very productive player. He spent, time with Colorado, I think. I think he actually played against us in the 2007 World Series, if I'm not mistaken. A huge power threat, perennially. But one last thing on Rafaela. If he can rein in the strikeouts and improve the plate discipline, we know the power's there. Man, if you could just have Duran and Rafaela at first and second, in the order, that's just like Ellsbury and Pedroia almost. That's going to be that type of presence. And Rafaela was showcasing his speed this weekend, and he's got basically the potential that Duran shows, turning singles into doubles. And he had a nice heads up base running play to get to go from first to third at some point in the series. So I hope the sky's the limit with him, and he's a guy I like to watch. I want him in the lineup every night because he's interesting, and I just want to see where the year takes him.
I think his Rookie of the Year campaign is going to be buoyed by how well the team is doing, right? If the Sox are doing well and he's a large contributor to that team, I think it's really going to help his odds. If he's performing well and the team isn't doing so hot, I think he kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But it also comes down to, that minimum plate appearance requirement, right? Are they going to try to, mess with his options, mess with sending him down to preserve some years, do that funky service time math? Time will tell, right? Charlie, Terry, anything else you guys would like to add tonight? Nope. Then we will wrap there. Thank you all for joining us on this Tuesday. Hope your week is going well. Take care.